Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this Saturday, the 15th day of August. I guess you could call it the Ides of August, 2020. I'm your host, Mark Call. And let's start off an attempt to try to wrap up the week of tyranny and out-of-control mayhem and all kinds of other things that seem to have been planned well in advance and are now being executed with a story out of the People's Republic of Portland, where Oregon State Police are pulling out of the city after the decision of the local, I would suspect, Soros-worshipping DA to drop nearly all of the charges against rioters who violently assaulted law enforcement officials. Said the Epoch Times, Oregon State Police troopers are leaving Portland despite continued violence in the state's largest city. Captain Timothy Fox, a state police spokesperson, told the Epoch Times that the decision stemmed from the DA overseeing Portland deciding not to pursue some criminal charges. Quote, "The Oregon State Police is continually reassessing our resources and the needs of our partner agencies, and at this time, we are inclined to move those resources back to counties where prosecution of criminal conduct is still a priority." Unquote. And as Mike Adams summarized it for Natural News, in essence, the People's Republic of Portland is now being plunged back into the same kind of lawless left-wing violence that characterized the CHAZ and CHOP zone in Seattle, which was openly allowed to be taken over by criminal terrorists with the blessing of the communist mayor and governor of that state. Basically, it boils down to why would the state police risk their lives fighting against a Bolshevik revolution that the city of Portland has already acceded to? Well, at least, folks, it demonstrates what a Fuhrer named Kamala Harris would intend to do. Meanwhile, in the People's Republic of New Jersey, the former Goldman Sachs executive, a.k.a. the Vampire Squid, and now, sadly, New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy, has announced that the state's November election will be conducted criminally, with proper rigging, mostly via mail-in ballots. And after conducting its primaries, almost entirely by mail, New Jersey now becomes the 9th state to say, oh yeah, we're all for rigging the next one, and moving to highly fraud-prone mail-in balloting for the November 3rd presidential election. As Zero Hedge Summary notes, during an interview on Fox Business yesterday, President Trump said that if the United States Postal Service doesn't get the $25 billion earmarked in the Democrat stimulus plan, then they won't have the money to handle those mail-in ballots, noting that the Trump administration has already approved a $10 billion loan to the post office back in the spring. And of course, says Tyler Durden, while leftists would like to ignore the probability of fraud, there are clearly millions of people around the U.S., many of them misguided left, who'd have no problem whatsoever filling out a few extra ballots that have been sent to deceased family members, pets, or people who've long since moved elsewhere, and then they'll submit them in the name of preserving democracy. In other words, look for a turnout and the electoral votes in the senile one column for New Jersey that exceeds the number of actual people still living in the state. And I guess it's fair to ask the question, can they really be that brazen? Can they really get away with that? They evidently did in the midterms, particularly in places like the People's Republic of California, and they've been shoring up Twitter to Facebook and Gulag ever since, which is part of the reason they need to shut down alternative media in plenty of time. And from there, on we go to some of the other major stories of the week, taking a look back.
Don't know much about history, don't know much biology.
And as you probably noticed, that required a special musical introduction. A song that, while it might be decades old, certainly describes what's going on in America with a K today to a T. We're seeing the same thing with patriotic songs like the Star Spangled Banner and even America the Beautiful that just no longer resonate with a nation that's far more Soviet-style America than it has been a constitutional republic for a long time now. And given that it's so apropos, Sam Cooke's classic may even be an appropriate substitute for the new national anthem, because it pretty well expresses the national opinion. If you didn't catch it the first time around, listen and see just how well this describes America post-liberty and post-COVID-1984.
Don't know much about history, don't know much biology.
Well, history, biology, and science, and total ignorance on all of the above. I guess that pretty well nails it. Most politicians today, and media personalities, don't even know what form of government we once had. Hint, never, ever was it intended to be a democracy. Now the trouble is, if you listen to the rest of the tune, it's a cute little love song from a number of decades back. You realize that what Sam Cooke is talking about is his love for his girl, who he thinks might actually be more attracted to him if he was an A student. Well, that really dates it now, doesn't it? Today, of course, if the song were rewritten, updated for a modern appeal, it'd be about political correctness, you know, mugging, looting, holding your gun sideways so you can't hit anything, and of course, raping hoes, too. Well, by now, of course, you know all of that was introduction for what's going on in the world today. To a large extent, we're almost getting used to insanity writ large. Your host's concern, increasingly, is that far too many people don't recognize it as such anymore. I heard a comment the other day that if you go to the Babylon Bee, hard as they may try, it's tough for them to stay ahead in satire of what's going on in the, well, let's call it the surreal world. So with the tip of the hat to David Knight, who saw it first, let's go to the Babylon Bee for this story. And yes, folks, it is satire, but just wait until tomorrow. Fans of college football are claiming that canceling the upcoming NCAA season would infringe on their God-given right to worship how they choose. Quote, you can cancel church, but don't take away college football. It's my constitutional right to worship Bama, said one fan of the University of Alabama football team. The founders say I can worship any way I choose, and for me, it's painting my face crimson and screaming at the top of my lungs every Saturday. People in the South have been particularly vocal about the issue, the piece continues, and though they only half-heartedly protested when church services were canceled, now they're up in arms, ready to start that second civil war over the possible cancellation of college football. And many, of course, are calling it a First Amendment issue, citing the freedom of religion. And here's the sad part, folks. At least they know what the First Amendment says, and you can't say that for most of the Antifa, BLM, and major media outlets. Much less pretty much anybody running for president from either of the two wings of that same evil bird of prey. Which brings me to a story that I've kind of already telegraphed anyway, but we do need to cover it because it was a big deal, albeit truly revolting and not in the least surprising. But hey, I've been predicting this for a long time anyway, so let's get it over with. Would you too have liked to have selected Joe Biden's presidential pick, and I chose that term explicitly, way before it was made public? Well, sure, it's easy. Just decide who of the possible candidates is absolutely positively the most evil, and there you go. Especially, and maybe this stands to reason, if she is an obvious, you can even see the puppet strings, George Soros surrogate. But even here, just in case there's any suspense left, let's drag it out for a few more seconds with the Babylon Bee story that pretty well nails it. In an unfortunate gaffe, they say, Biden misspoke during his VP announcement after a staffer failed to update the teleprompter with the proper name. I'm Joe Biden, he began, and I'm pleased to announce my VP pick is insert woman of color here. Oh, wow, that's great. He was then interrupted by a staffer who whispered something in his ear. Oh, yeah. Who? So he picked up where he left off and concluded thusly, I've selected Kamala Harris to be our next president. See what I mean, folks? Arguably the most satanically evil woman among a quite star-studded field of such. A totalitarian to the core, like the others, of course, she will force you to wear a mask, she will force you to bend over and take the vaccine, and she will take your guns first so you won't be able to resist. But there's a whole lot more than that when it comes to this particularly nasty wannabe Fuhrer. Like the kind of over-the-top hypocrisy that says, I'll throw hundreds and hundreds of pot users in prison while I joke about toking one down myself. But when it comes to summarizing at least part of the evil this woman has been up to, hey, let's turn to a former Democratic presidential candidate who was ejected from the race by the socialists for obvious reasons, like the fact that she was occasionally able to tell the truth. This is a snippet from Tulsi Gabbard's put-down of then-Senator Kamala Harris from a Democratic presidential hopeful debate just a little over 1 year ago today at the end of July 2019. And thanks, by the way, to the Gateway Pundit for the reminder. Because it was, in fact, Kamala Harris who actually, just prior to this, called Joe Biden a racist. And that may be one of the few times she was correct on that score. The moderator asked Gabbard about that, but she wouldn't take the bait. Instead, she said this.
I want to bring the conversation back to the broken criminal justice system that is disproportionately negatively impacting black and brown people all across this country today. Now, Senator Harris says she's proud of her record as a prosecutor and that she'll be a prosecutor president, but I'm deeply concerned about this record.
Quick aside here, only for some of the reasons that she ought to be. Obviously, the prosecutor president is going to start by prosecuting those who still believe we have a Bill of Rights.
That she'll be a prosecutor president, but I'm deeply concerned about this record. There are too many examples to cite, but she put over 1,500 people in jail for marijuana violations and then laughed about it when she was asked if she ever smoked marijuana. She blocked evidence. She blocked evidence that would have freed an innocent man from death row until the courts forced her to do so. She kept people in prison beyond their sentences to use them as cheap labor for the state of California. And she fought to keep cash bail system in place that impacts poor people in the worst kind of way.
After the typical insipid response about how we must have criminal justice reform, oh yeah, she'll reform it like Obama reformed the Constitution, Tulsi Gabbard was given a chance to wrap it up.
The bottom line is, Senator Harris, when you were in a position to make a difference and an impact in these people's lives, you did not. And worse yet, in the case of those who were on death row, innocent people, you actually blocked evidence from being revealed that would have freed them until you were forced to do so. There is no excuse for that. And the people who suffered under your reign as prosecutor, you owe them an apology.
Know this, folks. Tyranny never apologizes. No, folks, here she's horribly, catastrophically wrong. No doubt about it. This is reward for that kind of evil. I know there may be people suggest that, well, Hillary Clinton, as an open Satanist, is far more evil. Not necessarily. Sometimes it's better to hide certain things. But what's undeniable is that Hillary's been exposed. She's a multi-time loser. And on this score, Kamala Harris is clearly far more effective when it comes to implementing the anti-constitutional, yeah, let's call it what it is, outright satanic agenda. And if the election rigging is successful, hardly anybody thinks she'll have to wait very long for the senile one to be put out of the way. Speaking of which, in preparation for her campaign and then dictatorial reign, her Wikipedia page has been scrubbed, and the prosecutorial record there, far left as it was, has been wiped out. And interestingly, this revisionist history was first reported by The Intercept. I'm looking at a piece summarizing it from the Washington Standard, which says that there have been 500 revisions to Harris's Wikipedia page since May 9th, most of which have been made by one highly prolific editor. And that alone, given Wikipedia, tells you they lean far left. And a lot of it were things that might not play well with the party's progressive, a.k.a. Bolshevik, woke base. And let's not forget, this is the Soros plant that thinks it's tough on crime to prosecute people for marijuana while she's at home toking it down herself and then laughing about it. But that kind of hypocrisy, blatant as it is the least of the things that makes Kamala Harris just about the worst possible candidate and therefore the obvious choice. Certainly, she's a blatant gun banner and pretty much anti every single element of the Bill of Rights, which guarantees that when she takes over for the senile one, the open warfare in the streets that the left has been pushing for so long will, if it's not already become a reality by then, begin in earnest. Oh, and then, folks, you'll see tough on crime. As Michael Snyder recently reminded, this is the same woman who, when she was the Soros puppet in the Attorney General's office in California, ruthlessly went after pro-life activist David Daladin. You might remember him. This is the guy that filmed numerous undercover videos in which Planned Parenthood employees admitted they make huge profits from the sale of aborted baby parts. And that upset Harris so greatly, she sent a team of heavily armed agents to storm the home and make sure to seize all of his video footage. Whereupon she went after him with a vengeance. She supported a bill which would have put parents of what she called truant children in prison. And when it comes to gun banning and then gun confiscation, in a famous debate interchange with the senile one himself, who told her her plan for gun control by executive fiat didn't pass constitutional muster, she laughed derisively, scoffed, and then deployed one of her canned one-liners. Quote, I would just say, hey, Joe, instead of saying, no, we can't, let's say, yes, we can. Unquote. Which actually says as much about her contempt for the Constitution and rule of law in general as it does for the God-given and constitutionally protected right to keep and bear arms. Because even the evil Hillary Clinton herself never came right out and said that she intended to use an executive order in a nationwide gun grab. Here's an interesting story. Given the plethora of near-Earth orbiting asteroids that are set to come really close to the third rock from the sun, at least three within one lunar distance over the next month or so. Amidst this increased asteroid threat, says IntelliHub, a number of telescopes and government agencies have been shut down because, as Shepard Embellus puts it, maybe there's never been a more perfect time than now for an asteroid to blindside the Earth. Defying all logic, he begins, these telescopes and observatories around the world remain closed amid the COVID-1984 pandemic, while the risk of impacts of near-Earth-bound objects remains at an all-time high. Over 100 telescopes have now been reported to have been shut down in a move that makes virtually no sense. And that now includes Arecibo, one of the world's largest radio telescopes as well. And to make matters worse, the observatory was rendered inoperable after sustaining damage when a cable snapped unexpectedly, creating a 100-foot-long gash in the dish itself. And to make matters worse, says the piece, the Puerto Rico-based telescope was tracking a near-Earth orbiting object when it went offline. Between non-existent man-made global warming, climate change, space weaponry, and all kinds of other issues, would you believe that some are now suggesting there may be another agenda at play here as well? Here's one, though, that you don't have to be a conspiracy theorist to understand. Surging gun sales have now triggered the second ammo shortage of the year. One typical gun shop owner, Gregory Ionati, age 75, the owner of the gun shop Smoke and Guns, located in Oakmont, PA, told PJ Media, quote, prior to the COVID outbreak, President Obama was the best gun salesman we ever had. Anytime he was going to ban this or ban that, there was a rush on gun sales. When President Trump was elected, though, the fear of the gun ban subsided, and sales were so flat that several gun manufacturers went out of business. Unquote. But wait a minute. Along comes the plandemic. And Ionati says he made more gun and ammo sales between March and April this year than what was done in the last 3 years completely, calling the period crazy. It seems that more and more people are finally waking up to the obvious, folks. There was a point in having the Second Amendment in the Bill of Rights. And even some of the most clueless are starting to wake up to it once they see the looters and muggers and rapists on their own streets. Said Ionati, you wouldn't believe the first-time gun buyers I've seen. I started seeing little old ladies, 70, 80 years old, wanting to defend themselves because of what was going on. So I had to change my thinking. I had to start buying .22 Magnum revolvers. I have some revolvers here, but I had to start buying revolvers that women and older folks could use because they're easy to handle. Semi-auto and a revolver are two different things. The rest of the Zero Head summary goes on to say that unconstitutional FBI background checks. You might be allowed to buy a gun or ammo if you're a good little slave, and of course pretty soon that's going to be you better wear your mask or no guns for you, have gone up dramatically. Gee, there's a surprise in recent months. And now ammo shortages are making headlines, at least on local media outlets, over the last few weeks. In other words, good luck getting 9mm. And I'm hearing from gun dealers I know that Glock prices are up at least 50% if you can get them at all. Same thing goes for any other decent firearm that you might want. And hey, here's an interesting point. Now that Kamala Harris is set to be the deep state choice for the next president, if there was another firearms rush, nobody'd be able to tell because there isn't anything available anyway. And since I've already mentioned that we've been seeing this gun surge coming for a while now, let's take a quick trip in the Wayback Machine to the last week of July this year. Gun sales are up 95%. Ammunition sales are up 139% over the first 6 months of the year. Retailers have processed a record 10.3 million firearms transactions during that same time frame. And customers of all ages and demographic backgrounds are part of the ongoing sales surge. Says the National Shooting Sports Foundation, bottom line is that there's never been a sustained surge in firearm sales quite like what we're in the midst of. And as a summary from the Hal Turner Radio Show puts it, talk of civil war is now very much out in the open, and Americans even seem to know who the enemy is, communists from Black Lives Matter and Antifa. The trouble is, will they forget what Ben Franklin warned against and trade essential liberty for a little temporary security in the form of federal intervention? Courtesy of the Daily Mail in the UK. President Donald Trump set to escalate his federal intervention in cities on Wednesday by expanding what's called Operation Legend, deploying FBI and other agents to communist enclaves like Chicago and Albuquerque to quell what he claims is out-of-control violence. The move was announced Wednesday afternoon by Trump at the White House, again putting him at odds with far-left socialist mayors, especially infamous Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot. Mayer says the piece of opposed deploying federal forces to tackle protests, but Operation Legend, which was started in Kansas City, Missouri, involves surging Department of Just Us, and not Department of Achtung Homeland Security agents, to tackle crime rather than protests. And here's where it gets murky, folks, and not just the fact that socialist mayors and governors don't want federal intervention. Operation Legend, says the Daily Mail, was launched in Kansas City at the invitation of local officials who were concerned about a rise in gun crime, not about protests. And it saw the FBI, DEA, and of course, ATF agents increase their already unconstitutional presence in the city. The Daily Mail quotes President Trump to say, "I'm going to do something that I can tell you, because we're not going to let New York and Chicago and Philadelphia and Detroit and Baltimore and all of these, Oakland is a mess, we're not going to let this happen in our country," he said. "There will be more federal law enforcement, that I can tell you," unquote. And therein lies the rub, because if you read the Constitution, and very, very few of these people, whether they're mayors, governors, or presidents, much less senators and congressmen, actually have, there are only three actual constitutional federal crimes. Treason, and we've got a whole lot of that that's not being prosecuted, piracy on the high seas, and counterfeiting. And arguably, we've got a whole lot of that that's not even being mentioned, much less prosecuted. Because basically, that's what the Federal Reserve does, and if we had a constitution, they couldn't even exist. And arguably, as your host has now said for years, if we didn't have a Federal Reserve, and thus didn't have the biggest debt bubble in human history that's now imploding and needed to be blamed on somebody else, we wouldn't be having these other distractions either. Which brings me to another story I want to spend a couple of minutes on, but I do have to introduce it by noting that, hey, I mentioned how hardly anybody actually reads the Constitution, especially if they're part of that government that's trying to undermine it, but I will. This comes from the few and enumerated powers actually delegated to the central government under the Constitution in Article 1, Section 8. And it says, "The Congress shall have the power to," and it lists a number of these, but not nearly as many as are currently being violated in the United States. And one of them says, "to provide for calling forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and repel invasions." And right there, folks, you have the heart of what should have been done and absolutely positively isn't, as we see not only a continuing invasion from the South and now from the West Coast, but also a massively funded and well-organized national insurrection with the clear goal of overturning not only what's left of the Constitutional Republic, but expunging even its history as well. And with that in mind, here's the real point. If Trump and the Congress actually wanted to do it right, they would call out the militia and suppress this insurrection, rather than further overturning the Constitution by further usurping federal power they don't have. And of course, for obvious reasons, none of the deep state players is even remotely going to pay any attention to that. By the way, the next paragraph in Article 1 says that Congress shall also have the power to provide for organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia. But gee, kind of like the entire concept of actual limitations on central government power, they just as soon prefer that doesn't even exist. Along with the Second Amendment, the First Amendment, the Fourth Amendment, and just about all the rest of the Bill of Rights to boot. Which brings me next to a piece from Jeff Deist at Mises.org, a fellow that I got to know when he was working for Ron Paul in his congressional office years ago. It's entitled, "About Those Spooky Federal Cops in Portland." And he begins, "Dear Portlandia progressives, a federal government big enough to take care of you is also a federal government big enough to take care of you. Because scary, unidentifiable police, federal black sites, and procedureless snatching of individuals from the streets are the wholly predictable and natural consequences of the very policies you've advocated for decades. Why do you imagine," he asks, "a big government with lots of power will restrict itself to the cozy social justice issues and economic takings you support? Can a government capable of seizing the means of production not also seize you? You wanted everything run from Washington, D.C., and you got what you wanted," unquote. And that amounts to a police state, even as some people claim they want to defund the police. Imagine the irony, or the stupidity. "Everything real Americans once fought and died for is being stolen right before their muzzled faces and blinded eyes. But if we actually had a constitution, we would have never gotten here in the first place. And the trouble is, we certainly won't get it back by continuing down the same treacherous road, now at warp speed." I wish I could be more optimistic, folks. But until people wake up, rip off the mask, and realize what's being stolen from them right before their own blinded eyes, and turn back to what's right, They literally don't have a prayer. But we've got plenty more to talk about right after this bottom of the hour break.
I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me. Take me out to the black. Tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the...
Welcome back now to the second segment for this evening. I'm still your host, Mark Hall, and we're still basically talking about a nation gone nuts in so many ways. Let's start this segment off more or less chronologically with a bit earlier in the week. Even though I might suggest this segment was a bit harder to put together. Not because there wasn't news, it's because so much of the news is stuff that we've been hearing for so long, that is, if you're listening to the alternative media, like this show, and not hearing if you're listening to the waste stream. Let me show you what I mean. From Ethan Huff at Natural News, the COVID-1984 coronavirus came from, who could have thought it, a Chinese lab, and, says a renowned scientist, no vaccine will ever cure it. Well, we've known that literally for months, and Ethan Huff and others have been reporting it just from different sources, and the waste stream still isn't going to touch it. The president of the World Academy of Biomedical Sciences and Technologies, a fellow named Professor Giuseppe Trito, concluded an investigation that led him to the conclusion that the Wuhan COVID-19 coronavirus gained cross-species transmission functionality due to genetic engineering, who could have thought it, that took place where else? At the Wuhan Institute of Virology, China's only biosafety level 4 lab, and arguably a weapons lab to boot. In a book published in Italian originally, the title of which translates into English as China COVID-19, the chimera that changed the world, Trito explains how a PLA-owned coronavirus was genetically modified to become the China virus that's being reported around the world today, and he says the novel virus is a chimera, meaning it was created in the lab rather than in nature. He also links that same Wuhan Institute of Virology to both France and the United States, demonstrating how the governments of those two countries, notably both very socialist and Big Brother-oriented, provided Communist China with the financial and scientific resources needed to unleash this bioengineering experiment, which has had the intended, your host put that word in there, devastating global impact, primarily socioeconomic. From the People's Republic of Chicago, in the wake of more devastating riots, arguably right where they're intended to be, Mayor Lori Lightfoot, or Light in the Loafers, on Monday snapped at reporters for daring to point out the obvious, how violent looters took advantage of the complete lack of consequences for previous actions to keep on doing more of the same. Looters ransacked Chicago Monday night, wrote Christina Layla for TGP, and attacked police for 5 straight hours, including the shooting of a security guard, as widespread violent looting and rioting overwhelmed the socialist gun control mecca. Thousands of BLM criminals looted luxury stores on what's called the Magnificent Mile, not so much anymore, with many boldly even live-streaming their multiple felonies. And true to form, Chicago Mayor Lori Light and the Loafers refused to take responsibility for the mayhem, hey, what else is new, that continues under her watch. But she did, in fact, blame President Trump. And after that, she snapped at a reporter who dared to point out her continued failure to keep the violence in her city under control. Here's how she interrupts the police officer responding to the question.
It almost sounds as though you're saying this is the reason we have it is because the courts and the prosecutors were not doing their job, that they were going too easy on the looters from the last time around.
Don't take it from me. Just go by what's been done. I don't want to do a job for you, but just go by what's been done. There were no consequences for the people arrested.
Greg, let's be clear. I mean, don't bait us, okay?
Do not bait us.
This is a serious situation.
It's getting more and more serious by the day as these leftists continue to make a bad situation worse and disarm the innocent.
This is a serious situation. People are concerned about their safety. Officers are concerned about their safety, so don't bait us. What we're saying is, as a result of what happened last night, there have to be consequences.
If there were really going to be consequences, folks, a whole bunch of these leftists would already be under indictment. Here's what might be such a consequence, folks. Not for those encouraging the violence, but as a result of their actions, direct or indirect, in Wilson, North Carolina, a 5-year-old boy who happens to be white named Cannon Hennant on Sunday was riding his bike in front of his home when a 25-year-old black man named Darius Sessoms ran up to him, put a gun to his head, and executed him point blank in front of his two sisters. Here's the not too surprising result, nothing but crickets from the waystream media. And as disgusting as any execution-style murder of a young child is, I don't have to tell you what the situation would be, from that same waystream media, if the colors here were reversed. Sessoms was taken into custody on Monday and charged with first-degree murder. From Eric Blair, also at the Gateway Pundit, another story that you've probably heard before, but you know darn well that the CNN and NPR Kool-Aid drinkers certainly haven't. There are negative consequences to putting on your face muzzle and walking around with it for a long time. A New York dentist now warns that wearing a face mask for hours on end can be harmful to your dental health, too, and give you what they call mask mouth. Said Dr. Rob Ramondi, co-founder of One Manhattan Dental, to the New York Post, quote, "We're seeing inflammation in people's gums that have been healthy forever, and cavities in people who've never had them before. About 50% of our patients are now being impacted by this, so we decided to name it mask mouth, after meth mouth." And in case you haven't heard that one, folks, and maybe we shouldn't be surprised, the term meth mouth is widely used by dentists to describe dental problems that arise among methamphetamine users, because addicts often end up with cracked, black and brown stained teeth because the stimulant causes sugar cravings, teeth grinding, and jaw clenching, and of course they often neglect their oral hygiene. Similarly, constant mask wearing, for starters, can lead to all kinds of mouth maladies, including cavities, decaying teeth, and dangerous halitosis. Dr. Mark Sclafani, Ramondi's business partner, said that oral problems can sometimes lead to far worse conditions, like gum disease, aka periodontal disease, that will eventually lead to strokes and an increased risk of heart attacks, because people tend to breathe through their mouth instead of through their nose while wearing a mask, he said. And the reason for that, folks, is because they're not getting enough oxygen. And while it might not be of as much concern to dentists, regular listeners here will no doubt know that rebreathing your own exhaust gases through a facial petri dish, not to mention the increased touching of all of that with your hands, can lead to increased, no, not decreased, risk of all kinds of infections, including the booga 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 ones that the great big stinking liars tell you the masks are supposed to help. Concluded Dr. Sclafani, people come into us saying things like, "Wow, my breath smells. I need a cleaning." But, he said, when you smell the bad breath, you either already have periodontal disease or you have a lot of bacteria that's sitting on your tongue because of dry mouth, unquote. Oh, and here's another one of those, gee, you could have predicted this one, couldn't you? Speaking of idiot bureaucrats on a power trip, the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources has told employees that they must wear a face mask at home even, especially if they make Zoom calls, so that people can see them and they set a good example. They certainly wouldn't want a screenshot appearing of some Wisconsin state employee not looking like a good little slave now, would they? Oot from Big Brother's Ministry of Information Control Central, Gulag. Lance Johnson for Natural News tells us that Google is partnering with the U.S. Black Chambers, Inc. and now providing resources for Antifa and BLM terrorists so that they can target businesses that are not owned by the black community. Maybe that'll help the looters focus their attacks on the communist-controlled meccas. Gulag has built a racial profiling platform that judges businesses by the owner's skin color, marking black-owned businesses with a fancy new icon intended to facilitate financial support, wink wink, nudge nudge, exclusively for black-owned businesses. When searching for businesses on Gulag or Gulag Maps, black-owned businesses will sport a new black heart icon embossed over an orange three-stripe background to encourage shoppers to purchase from the black community. Community first, and let your imagination run wild, folks, about the rest. Because you know that's at least part of the intention here, whether they say it or not now, don't you? Said Carmi Bassnight, co-organizer of something called Boycott for Black Lives, one of the several communist-oriented black power groups that encourages Americans to judge a business by its skin color, quote, "Our hope is that companies will acknowledge the strength of black people's buying power, as well as our collective, buying power with our allies, she said. And as Johnson points out, Gulag's new racist platform is the perfect tool for terrorist groups like Antifa and BLM, who can now single out white-owned businesses online and then know which ones to hunt down via mob violence, while threatening them, of course, with arson attacks and the inevitable mafia-style extortion. There's one more story up there today that your host has been talking about, but the waste stream, up until the early part of this week anyway, in the form of the UK's Daily Mail, didn't seem to want to touch. Gee, folks, just maybe because President Trump said from the beginning the generals had told him, obviously, it was a bomb. They have a headline, though, that says, explosive expert now claims Beirut explosion that killed 160 people was caused by burning military missiles. No, not ammonium nitrate, because the blast cloud was orange and not yellow. The fellow's name is Danilo Cape, an expert nicknamed Mr. Dynamite, who revealed, quote, I think there were armaments there. And he's one of the country of Italy's leading explosive experts. Videos of the explosion, he said, show orange plumes of smoke, which is the wrong color, and he noted there should have been a catalyst because otherwise it wouldn't all have exploded together, something your host has been saying since day one. You can clearly see a brick orange column leading to bright red, typical of lithium participation, which in the form of lithium metal is the propellant for military missiles. I think there were armaments there. Unquote. And he explained that there was probably a first larger explosion, which may have started a fire where the ammunition was stored, and then this might have spread to, quote, where there was some high explosive contained in rockets or missiles. Others that aren't buying the big Oklahoma City-type bomb explosion include Terry Meissen, writing for LouRockwell.com, who's among many indicating that Israel and Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu designated this exact location in a speech to the United Nations back on September 27th of 2018 as a military target. Basically, it needed destroying. And conclude that the Hezbollah weapons warehouse in Beirut was destroyed with a new weapon, which is not well known. It did cause considerable damage in the city, injuring over 5,000 people and killing at least 160, while destroying a number of buildings. And Meissen says the following, the weapon was tested in Syria on a plane in the countryside, and then in the Persian Gulf on the water against Iranian military vessels. But this is the first time it's been used in an urban environment. And in particular, that environment made the air blast and vibrations reflect off the water and the mountains. So far from destroying only the port of Beirut, it killed and injured a whole bunch of extra people and largely destroyed the entire eastern part of the city. He goes on to say Israel immediately activated its networks in the international media to cover up what they did and lend credence to the idea of an accidental explosion of a large fertilizer stockpile. And as so often is the case, false culprits are named, and the international media machine repeats the lie over and over again in the absence of any actual investigation. And yes, as the Daily Mail notes, there was indeed a smokestack incompatible with the thesis of a fertilizer explosion. And, just as neither Syria nor Iran had communicated about this weapon when they were hit, the Lebanese political parties immediately reached an agreement not to say anything in order not to further demoralize their population. An investigation, sick, has been opened, not into the cause of the explosion, but into the responsibility of the port's personnel for storage of that large amount of fertilizer right there that they're blaming for it. And furthermore, notes the author, the United Nations Tribunal for Lebanon, which was due to make public its verdict in the case of the assassination of a former prime minister named Rafik Hariri back in 2005, has decided to postpone that for a few days. Identically, though, in that case, the explosion of a pickup truck masked the firing of a missile with a new weapon. Just as this time, the explosion of ammonium nitrate masked the firing of a missile with yet another new weapon. And furthermore, and finally, this time, the attack is not just targeting Shiite Hezbollah, but the entire Lebanese resistance as a whole. I alluded to this, but maybe it's time for some comic relief now. The Russians have developed that new vaccine. I even saw a story saying that Putin's daughter had taken it. And that leads me to this. Former FDA Director Scott Gottlieb, himself a big pharma insider, appeared Tuesday on CNBC's Squawk Box, and he weighed in on the COVID issue du jour, namely the newly registered Russian vaccine, which Putin has touted as the first-in-the-world accomplishment, but Big Pharma's big guy has his doubts, saying, quote, I wouldn't take it. think about that, folks. I wouldn't take it, certainly not outside a clinical trial right now. It appears that it's only been tested in several hundred patients at most, he said. What he didn't say, folks, is that's going to be true of the U.S. vaccine, regardless of whether it works or not, because you know they're going to skip the testing in order to slam it into people's arms ASAP. Obviously, you can't do long-term testing in weeks. And by the way, so much of the testing that they have done has shown really, really nasty side effects. So why keep doing that? Especially if you can't be sued for hurting anybody. I don't know whether the Russians have indemnified their big pharma companies if they kill a lot of people, but you know darn well that the U.S. versions already have been, and the same goes true for most of Europe and the rest of the world. So let me put it this way, as kindly as I can. Anybody that takes this stuff is volunteering to be a human guinea pig. And the long-term effects? Well, we'll find those out long-term. But hey, do you really think that the Waystream Press is actually going to report them? Back next to the insanity. And you'll see why over the next few stories. Courtesy of Steve Watson and Prison Planet, Brian Stelter, host at the Criminally Negligent Network, declared on Sunday that it is both offensive and otherworldly, his terminology, that right-wing radio hosts would dare to question the mental health of senile, creepy, quid pro Joe Biden. Despite, notes Watson, his constant brain freezes, bizarre gaffes, and, yeah, increasingly undeniable senility. And I'll try to quote just as much of this as I can stand, and it's not going to be very much. Let's go on a trip together. And maybe this guy's been tripping quite a bit too much lately. To an alternative universe, he began, adding you never know what's happening there unless you tune into right-wing talk radio. Yeah, some of the most powerful talkers in the country, he continued, have turned their sights on poor Joe Biden. What you're about to hear them saying is mind-boggling, he said, whereupon he played some clips, everybody noting what's obvious to those with half a brain, that the man is way past his use-by date. Look, he said, whether you like Biden or not, this stuff is offensive and otherworldly. Unquote.
Are you crazy? Or just plain stupid?
Stupid is stupid does, Mrs. Blue.
I guess.
After all that, I do guess we need to make the point that it's not just the American communist left that's gone absolutely foaming at the mouth screaming insane. There's the formerly free Australian state of Victoria, too. Writes James Dellingpole for Breitbart, Victoria has adopted some of the strictest COVID-1984 Octoon lockdown rules anywhere in the world, including an 8 p.m. curfew and police roadblocks to discourage any citizens with pesky notions about vestiges of personal freedom. He quotes what now passes for law enforcement down under. Quote, we had to smash out car windows and pull people out because they wouldn't give us details. They wouldn't tell us where they were going. Unquote. We showed them. No, he says, this isn't a prequel to Mad Max, where Australia gets taken over by fascists. That's already a done deal. This is right now happening in the Australian state of Victoria under the regime of power-crazed hard-left premier Daniel Andrews, or Kim Jong-Dan, as he's known locally. No doubt, folks, if he'd just get himself transgendered and cut something off he probably isn't using anyway, he'd be right at the top of Biden's list for Veep. Oh, and unless you're still stuck in the past and that Constitution thing, remember, Biden knows full well, being a natural-born U.S. citizen no longer has anything to do with anything. Police, as we've reported here before, are now even allowed into your home to carry out spot checks, and they don't need no stinking warrant, much less your permission, and any Australians that dare resist are finding themselves confronted with the full force of what now passes for law. People, said another part of that same quote I've already mentioned, who don't think the law applies to them, we've seen them at checkpoints baiting police, not providing their name and address. On at least three or four occasions in the past week, we've had to smash the windows of people in cars and pull them out of there so they could provide their details because they weren't telling us where they were going. They weren't adhering to the chief health officer guidelines and they weren't providing their name and their address. But what actually justifies, asked Dellingpole, this incredible level of police state abuse? In the entire state of Victoria, there have been just 162 deaths, even attributed to COVID-1984. And even in the whole of Australia, the total is still only 247. To put that in perspective, that's less than half the number of people who die in that formerly free nation every year from skin diseases, and about one-fifth of the number killed in car accidents, not counting when the police bust them up. Why, you'd think they could at least take a lesson from the totalitarian governors here in the United States and start counting traffic fatalities as COVID deaths, along with, well, let your imagination run wild. Obviously, Victoria's premier, Kim Jong-Dan Andrews, and his various black-clad henchmen, and yeah, folks, you know it, they do wear black, hasn't got the memo. Here, courtesy of Lockdown Skeptics, is a reprise of just a few of the new rules imposed on Victoria's state capital of Melbourne for at least the next 6 weeks. You already know about the curfew and the fact that they don't need no stinking warrant. Outside of curfew hours, though, you may only leave what you thought was your home for four reasons. Shopping for food and essential items, care and caregiving, daily exercise, and work. Said Kim Jong-dan, we can no longer have people simply out and about for no good reason whatsoever. And even on those few remaining liberties, there are some massive restrictions, like daily exercise must be within a 5-kilometer radius of your home, and you're not allowed to be out more than an hour. You can't exercise in groups of more than two, even if they're in your household. Golf and tennis venues, which might have once qualified as exercise, have now been closed. And apart from exercise, only one person at a time is allowed to leave once a day for essential supplies. And on those essentials, of course, there are also limits. Things you might need, like dairy, meat, vegetables, fish, and toilet paper. Weddings are no longer allowed, funerals are limited to 10 people, and the face muzzle, of course, is now mandated everywhere outside your home. Although, no doubt, folks, since health has nothing to do with it, but tyranny does, that'll be next. Hey, Mad Max, eat your heart out. The future's here, and it's a lot scarier than Thunderdome ever was. And you can rest assured, folks, that the techniques for compliance that they develop there will be used in places like Michigan and California next. Not to be outdone, though, the gun-free killing zone of the People's Republic of Chicago is now a war zone. Hundreds of what the bought and paid for local press is calling mostly peaceful protesters.
That's my story and I'm sticking to it.
Swept through the Magnificent Mile, no longer so magnificent, and other parts of downtown Chicago early Monday morning, smashing windows, looting stores, confronting police, and at one point at least exchanging gunfire with officers, said authorities. Bridges were even raised to prevent the armed but peaceful gun-toting looters from getting downtown. Didn't seem to work very well. Not wanting to be outdone, California is now trying to one-up the welfare state and approved a pilot plan to pay $1,250 to anyone who manages to test positive for coronavirus. Oh, and you know there's going to be a lot of those, right? Whether you have it or not. And encourage them to stay home and self-isolate. Alameda County Board of Supervisors has set aside $10 million for the bogus program, which will allow payments to 7,500 people, says the Daily Mail. You know what, folks? Your host could tell them how to save $10 million. Just add 7,500 people to the count, call it good. But come to think of it, just how much more bankrupt could California get anyway? New Mexico seems to want to be a communist satellite, too, although sadly for their tyrannical governor, she can't hold a candle to the evil of Kamala Harris. But obviously, she'll keep working on it. The woman is out of control, says the piece from Jim Hoft at the Gateway Pundit, and Michelle Lujan Grisham is now saying she intends to keep all the tyrannical COVID practices in place even after the, insert proper reverence here, gift from Big Brother vaccine is available. Quote, let's hold these behaviors beyond the vaccine because these are good public health behaviors that will prevent the spread of influenza, that will prevent the spread of colds.
That's my story. My story. Well, I ain't got a witness and I can't prove it, but that's my story and I'm sticking to it.
We should start thinking about this as the right public health path forever, irrespective of COVID, unquote. Well, one thing's for sure, they will prevent the spread of liberty. From there, let's do a brief headline recap of so many things that illustrate the country is beyond insane at this point. Courtesy of BigLeaguePolitics.com, the tech giant to Facebook is now allowing an Antifa-style group to organize a potentially violent so-called, and this is a quote, White House siege next month on their platform. Here's the line from the Adbusters pushing their upcoming event on Facebook. Quote, on September 17th, 2020, we will lay siege to the White House, and we will sustain it for exactly 50 days. We need your voice of wisdom and expertise to pull off a radically democratic tone shift in our politics. And they boast that their extremist display will bring about the fabled New World Order, a common goal, explains Big League Politics, for leftists, liberals, and progressives, who intend to destroy the United States Constitution and national sovereignty along with it. Note, though, that to Facebook doesn't seem to have a problem with this, violence or no. Call this a related story, courtesy of Summit News and Paul Joseph Watson. Leftists on Reddit suddenly dropped all of their alleged concerns about police brutality to celebrate, violently even, the video of a woman in Australia who was put in get this, a chokehold by a cop. No, not because of her color, although that might have been a factor. She was white. It was because she wasn't wearing her mandated face muzzle. The video shows a police officer in Melbourne, Australia, grabbing the woman by the throat, wrestling her to the ground, then sitting on her while maintaining the chokehold, all for the pseudo-crime of believing she was still a free person. And the footage is bad enough, concludes Watson, but it follows other incidents where police in the region have enforced the state of Victoria's draconian new curfew and lockdown law with physical force. But it's ironic that the very same leftists who've been decrying police brutality for a couple of months now, and using that as an excuse to riot and loot, apparently think that police brutality is just fine when it comes to enforcing police state COVID-19 lockdowns. All of which basically tells you folks exactly what's coming next.